Our house was blew up, and there was myself and my brother and sister and my mother in the house. So that trauma of the conflict was right on our doorstep. My mum constantly telling me, do not go here, do not go there, watch yourself, you can't go into certain areas. I then went full time in the local chip shop because it was on the road where I lived. It was safe. The owner treated the workers dismal. He paid us very low wages. So I joined Trademark and it was a massive shock to me. They said, no one is better than anyone in here. Everybody is equal in here. Our aim is to get you up to exactly what we earn. And I was like, what? So everything just completely changed for me. The Belfast Cleaning Co-op started with working class women from very deprived backgrounds. Some of them hadn't got a lot of schooling or understanding of businesses. And one woman who has passed away was a founding member. And I remember her words to me was, if a woman is getting a real living wage, that will make me a very happy person. Just one woman. Because that has made a difference to one person's life.
Today's guest is Alice McLarnon. Alice is a member of the worker cooperative Trademark, which is based in Belfast. Trademark is the anti-sectarian and anti-racist unit of the Irish labour movement. Their work prioritises post-conflict transformation and political economic development, providing education and support around politics, cooperatives, and organisational skills such as financial management and governance. Alice joined Trademark as their office and financial manager, but later moved on to supporting groups herself. One of the groups that she worked with was a group of Catholic and Protestant women that ended up forming the Belfast Cleaning Cooperative, which Alice is also a member of. The Cleaning Cooperative has gone on to win several awards and has been used as a template to form other cooperatives all around the UK. Alice, welcome to
Hello, nice to meet you, Caleb.
Punchcard. Okay, great. So, first question is, so in your own words, what is a worker cooperative?
To me, it's a business run by the workers. It's a democracy completely embedded in the workplace. It's a voice for every single person that works there. They feel equal, they feel empowered, they know that democracy is there. And I think there's definitely, when it comes to women's cooperatives and the cleaning co-op, it's a collective of like-minded people who have the same goal, who have the same say, and they're all in it together for to make the co-op better.
Nice. Okay, so we'll take a kind of step back and talk a little bit more about your kind of experience and what led you up to being in a cooperative or to joining Trademark and then ending up helping people to start cooperatives. So you actually grew up in Belfast during the Troubles. How did that experience shape you and, your younger life lead you to where you are now?
Well, I mean, I was born on the Falls Road in 1967, just prior to the real troubles had broke out and the conflict. The Falls Road area where I was born was a very working class and very deprived area. It was also a very unequal community because of the government that was running the north of Ireland at the time. I come from a family who were working class people. My grandfather was a docker. Worked down in the docks. He was a socialist who then taught his daughter, who was my mother, about socialism, and that then was fed down to me. In 1971, our house was blew up, and there was myself and my brother and sister and my mother in the house. So that trauma of the conflict was right on our doorstep. We moved further up the road, and I grew up in a Catholic community that was really tightly packed. I think people were out to look out for each other, and it was a separation. It was the Catholic community were looking for each other, and the Protestant community were looking out for each other. And that separation, I mean, I can look out my window right now, and there's a 60-foot wall, and it's a peace wall, and it's dividing the nationalists from the loyalists, and it runs 2.5 miles long, and it runs from the mountain, which you cannot see, right down into the city centre, and it's still there. There's more peace walls now than there was before the peace deal. And I say that Protestants and Catholic people work together. You know, the workplace is the biggest interface. You know, if you look at all the big factories or if you look at different businesses within the town, There's Catholics and Protestants working together everywhere, but all the time I was educated and fed information on always caring about others and that we were equal and we were always equal and never discriminate against people. And basically the anti-racism, anti-sectarianism was throughout my childhood, throughout my school years. Obviously there was serious troubles going on during growing up as a young woman. But I was always very active in the community. You know, even when I was 19 or 20, I was doing different community things as a volunteer. Fast forward, married, a few children, I was still active in the community, whether it was helping the local nursery school out for stuff or a local old people's home that wanted a day out. It was always constantly active within the community. I seen that the need was there. The need was there to help different members of the community who either were very vulnerable members of the community or who lost out on different things within their lives, and that little bit of help would have picked them up. There was a local child who had severe autism. The father wanted to get a colour room in the garage built. He was tortured, so a group of mothers got together and we fundraised and we got that room done. There was a local nursery school who had water buckets around the different areas in the nursery school. The funds were cut by government and by also the Catholic Church, who actually owned the building. So we did a fundraiser to repair the roof. Different small things that you continually did just to help your own community, to make life a little bit easier for members of your community, because the solidarity was there. You know, the people wanted to help each other. And after being reared up through the troubles and seeing how much deprivation and how much hurt and how many deaths and destruction caused during them years, it was just embedded in me from I was a child right up through. And everybody that I knew wasn't the same, and family members were the same. Some did a lot more than others. And whether that's your own community or a broader community or someone at your side of the world, you know, that's what human beings are meant to do for one another. That I don't know any different. You know, that's the way that I think that's the way everybody should be in the world.
That was quite an interesting point that you said that, yeah, work is this interface where the two conflicting sides come together. So I think that segues nicely into talking about. So at 15, you left school and went into work. And yeah, can you talk a little bit about what your experience of work was at the time?
My first job, I was 14. I was still at school. I worked in the local chip shop, and I was treated as a menial young person. Getting at the time, I earned 75 pence per hour, so that was a long time ago. Kill it. And then my first, I had a. There was a scheme at the time called YTP, and it was Young Youth Training Program, and I was sent to college one day a week, and 4 days a week I was put in the Abbey National Building Society because I wanted to do administration and finance. I worked there for 6 months, and the management were not very nice. You could tell that they knew I was a young Catholic girl. The one manager that worked there basically used me as a shop girl. Go to a shop and get me this, go to a shop and get me that. I didn't really learn an awful lot. I didn't really get put out front to help train on you know, as a clerk. I was filing in the shop. That was the way I was trained. So I got a wee bit pissed off with that, to be honest with you. And I thought, right, I'm not even finishing this. And I went on and got a job in a cafe, Kate's Kitchen, and there was Protestant and Catholics working in the cafe. And I knew that they were Protestants and remember my history. So I had to be very careful about where I lived and what. You know, if you went to any job from the troubles and right up until I was going to work, was what school did you go to? Because as soon as you said what school you went to, they knew what your religion was. You know, if you went to St. Genevieve's, it was right away, you know, she's Catholic. So you had to be very careful of who you spoke to. Also, when I was 14, it was around the Shankill Butchers, and you probably don't even know who the Shankill Butchers are. This was a group of loyalists, paramilitaries that would have took people off the street, chopped them up in bits and left them in wheelie bins. And they had committed quite a few murders at the time. So I remember my mum constantly telling me, do not go here, do not go there, watch yourself, you can't go into certain areas, you'd be very vulnerable. So all these different things would have been embedded in your brain when you went to work in City Centre. You had to watch what you said. I then went full time in the local chip shop because it was on the road where I lived. It was safe. It was local. I knew every customer that came in through the door. Real community spirit. And it was also during the hunger strikes. And when the hunger strikes were happening, there would have been rioting outside the front door of the chip shop. There would have been young people on top of the roof throwing petrol bombs at the army. There would have been hijacks of buses because maybe one of the hunger strikers had died. The chip shop, the owner was a millionaire who had businesses all over Belfast. He treated the workers very, very dismal. He paid us very low wages. He didn't have any respect for any other workers. The majority of us were women. So he was also misogynistic and he thought he could get away with coming off for different things. Different remarks to the workers. And you have to remember this was during the Troubles. This was women, local mothers working to try to earn a few pound. There really wasn't such a thing as going to your local union and complaining about them because it wouldn't have happened. And none of us were in unions. There wasn't a lot of work on the road that was close by to your family and to your community. So women who work for him just get on with it. Maybe we all supported one another. Now, in saying that, it wasn't like bad stuff, but it's usually ill remarks, and the pay was absolutely shite. The conditions were dismal, and you would have worked at 1 o'clock in the morning. We were involved in armed robberies where a guy came in and put a gun to me and said we didn't want it ever hang out of the till. The two girls that I was working with were out the back having their break, and I run out and says we're being robbed. When we came back, there was a shoe floating in the chip thing where he had jumped over the counter, put his foot right into the deep fat fryer, and that was karma. And then he took everything out of the till at the same time with very blistered feet. There was another time I got a gun pointed at me, and I had just made a portion of chips up for a customer who was outside with his partner. And he had asked for loads of salt and vinegar and ketchup on it, and the robber decided to lift the chip up and shove it in my face. So there's all different things that there was different. There was a robber actually shot dead by the army right outside the door of the shop. And when my mother was working, that's actual night. Going back to the owner, when we were robbed and we rang him and told him that we had just been robbed by gunpoint, his answer was, "Sure, clean up the place. I'll get onto the cops, and just stay open because all the bars are open and are closing soon. So all the customers be on their way to get chips." That's how much he cared about the girls who had just had a gun pointed at them, and been through a lot of trauma. So, and we did have to stay open, and we did serve the drunk people coming into the local bars to get their last bag of chips before they go home, and that was the treatment from that. So that was my life growing up until such times that I got married at the age of 19, and I had my first child at 20. So then I was a mother. I was a young mother. I was looking after my young family, and that's the way I wanted it. But then I thought I left school so young. I didn't leave with very many qualifications. So when my youngest two were going to nursery school and primary school, I went back to education. Because I wanted my children to see that learning is a good thing. So when I was sitting with my book studying at night, my children were sitting doing their homework as well. And that's where I was. And at the same time, I was also a volunteer within the community, doing different community activist stuff. Then I went to the job market to get a job. I had all the qualifications, and the girl in the job market said, "You're actually ideal to work here in the job market to advise and guide people to get a job. Would you take a job here?" And I got a job in the job market, completely different. It was based down the bottom of the Falls Road. It was a great collective of community people who understood workers' rights, who understood working mothers, who were very, very supportive of working mothers. It was people who were searching for work, and they were very kind and caring for anybody coming in to look for a job. I have not one bad thing to say for any of the workers that worked in the job market that I worked in. Not one bad thing to say. The community feeling was within that workplace. The support and the network and the system setup was within that workplace, and I really enjoyed it. And the only reason I left it was a job actually came in that was really of interest to me, and that was the cross-border, cross-community work, and I applied for it and got it. The first thing that stood out to me was part-time work, and it was within hours of my children's school. So that was the first, because my children were the most important thing. So if I could fit my work around my children's school life and home life, that's what I aim for. So it was 9:30 to 1:30. It was 20 hours a week, Monday to Friday. Perfect for me. Kids to school, go to work, go home, pick kids up from school. I was doing the admin and the finance side of things and working with the funders and doing the claims and doing, payrolls and things. But the work still involved me going and visiting all these groups and to build up relationships and to build up. And also it was an education program. It was to teach the people from the south of Ireland what life was like in the north. And it was also very good for the Protestants to understand where the Catholics were coming from and the Catholics to understand where the Protestants were coming from because of their own history and their own identity. The issue was that they seemed to not realize that they were all in the same boat. They were all living in working class area. They all had the same social problems. They all had the same social issues with high unemployment, mental health problems, low education was quite high in the Protestant community. Places in the schools, local healthcare, it was all the same problems, even though the 60-foot wall was dividing them. So we built up a good lot of connections from around the whole island of Ireland. I was job sharing with a girl, and I did Monday, Tuesday, half day Wednesday. She did half day Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. The work I used to leave on a Wednesday would have been still there the following Monday, not done. So I was doing a full-time job in part-time hours for part-time wages, and there was another worker getting paid. I brought it to the board, I brought it to the management. I did that, just went back to square one again, and I was feeling quite unhappy within that job because of the way I was being treated. I wasn't in a union, and so bad feelings. I had bad feelings, and I just thought I need to move on. But I didn't know where I was going to move on or what I was going to do, and I hadn't made the final decision that I was going to change the job. Until the guy that I used to work with told Trademark about me and told them that they needed an Alice. My life changed the day that they asked me to come down to have a chat. So initially it was September 2006. I came down to Trademark's offices and I had a meeting with two other board members and one of the founders, Joe Law. And I had the interview and asking me questions, do you know funders? Do you know how to do this? Do you know how to do that? And I was going, yeah, I do that every day. That's part of my bread and butter. I know exactly what you're talking about. I actually started in the September of 2006. I started here. It was a culture shock. It was complete because in interaction, we had our CEO, we had our management, we had our board of directors above us, we had interns below us, and there was a hierarchy and there was a pyramid. And there was a massive difference in salaries. The CEO was making maybe three, four times more than what the people who were working in the admin and the finance. The development officers were earning more, even though you probably were doing a lot of their work as well. So there was a pyramid of the pay structure, and there was a hierarchy, and there was dictation of what you do and what you don't do. And there wasn't an awful lot of flexibility as well. So I joined Trademark and it was a culture, it was a massive shock to me. The first week I joined and I came in and it was myself and Joe Law, and we give it 2 weeks for him to go through every client, every project, every funder, for me to write them all down to get my head around who funds what, and just the whole induction to the first 2 weeks. And then I was asked, what do you earn? And I told him what I had earned previously, and they went, oh, we're not having that. He says, our aim is to get you up to exactly what we earn. And I was like, what? And they said, no one is better than anyone in here. We need everybody to be, everybody is equal in here. So within the first 6 months or 7 months of Trademark, I received about four pay raises. And I was earning £7,000 part-time a year, 20 odd years ago. And when I moved to Trademark, at the time, the development officers were only earning about 20, 21,000. My wages went up to £10,500, so that I was 50% of exactly what they were earning full time. That was a culture shock to me because anytime Joe rang me and went, Alice, can we afford to get you back up another bit to get you equal with us? And I was going, Joe, I got a pay raise last month. And he's going, no, but no, this is the way it is in here. So it started to feed into me that there was no hierarchy. We were all equal. We were all as valuable. We had team meetings every Monday. We sat and discussed everything. Decisions were made collectively. We were running as a co-op, but I didn't realize that was the name of how we were running. We were running as a co-op. Any projects that we were planning for, it was a collective that was doing the fundraising. If it was an application, there was different people doing different parts of the application. So we collectively all knew what we were doing. And it was weird for me. It was a bit weird for me because I was in a room with two men and just me, and they were asking me my thoughts on things, where normally if you look over my last previous three or four jobs, it was controlled, it was dictated, and I was paid crap money. So everything just changed. Everything just completely changed for me.
And then up until this point, had you had any interaction with cooperatives? Like, did you know what a co-op was at all?
I knew what a co-op was, and it was the same as everybody thinks now, 20 years later, about, the co-op shop or the co-op funeral parlor. I didn't know that it couldn't just be a supermarket, or didn't, a funeral or an undertaker's or a bank. I didn't realize that it could be everything until I came to Trademark.
As we've just heard from Alice, she was very lucky to have stumbled across Trademark and worker cooperation, and it did nothing less than change her life. But not everyone is as fortunate. With Punchcard, we are going to change that by representing worker cooperatives in new media like podcasts and videos. We will show a new generation of workers there's a worker-controlled alternative to unequal and exploitative work. But we need your help. We're at a crucial time of our development, where our resources don't match our ambitions. That's why we need just 50 people to give £5 a month, and we'll be able to dedicate more time and energy to making the show reach as many people as possible. We want to be able to pay contributors for their time, employ an editor, and produce episodes more regularly. To support us, head to opencollective.com/workersco-op/projects/punchcard. The link will also be in the show notes. To become a financial contributor from just £5 a month and help bring worker cooperatives to a new generation. Coming back to Trademark, you said that it's an anti-sectarian and anti-racist unit of the Irish labour movement. How did that come about? Can you kind of expand on what that means exactly?
Trademark was founded in 2001 by Joe Law and Stevie Nolan. They used to work for the former organisation called Counteract, which was the anti-sectarian, anti-racist unit of ICTU, which is the Irish Congress of Trade Unions. And Joe and Stevie in 2001 set up Trademark to do research, education, evaluation of different projects. They did it on a shoestring. They had very, very little money coming in. In fact, I know that Joe and Steve used to tell me stories of they may have had £200 coming in 1 month, and they split the £200 between them to live. As the years went on, they started to grow. People knew who they were. People understood what they provided and the training they provided. They would have went into the workplace and completed training on anti-sectarian and to all the workers. And I joined in 2006, so they were only going about 5 years when I joined, and I was the third employee to start within Trademark. The work snowballed. The amount of work that's completed in this last 20 years by Trademark for only a small amount of people is phenomenal. It's just unreal the amount of work that has been completed. Because we go into the workplace, and because the unions call on us if there's a sectarian or a racist incident within the workplace, then some businesses will take this seriously and then try to educate their staff on the reasons why you cannot be sectarian and you cannot be racist, and it will not be happening within this workplace. There was one Asda supermarkets. Joe Law trained 4,000 staff. Over a year and a half, he did half-day sessions with every store within the north of Ireland. When I joined here in 2006, as I say, the flat level structure, the cooperative sort of feeling, they were always educating on democratic ownership, political economy. We started to really look into about co-ops around 2009 and 10, and because we realized that we were that structure, we just didn't have the legal document or anything, but we did follow the seven principles of cooperation. We just didn't realize it, I think. And in 2011, Co-ops UK give a small pot of money to cooperative business consultants to, I think that there was a pot of money to go to all the different areas within Wales, Scotland, England, and Northern Ireland was named in it.
I actually didn't know that you weren't kind of like officially or claiming to be a cooperative until a little bit more recently, but you were informally doing all of the things that make you a co-op. You know, I know there are lots of groups that do that all over the UK, you know, basically just a label. And as you say, most people think it's just a supermarket, so you know, it sort of doesn't really filter through. So do you know where those kind of principles came from then, of kind of being non-hierarchical, of being equal pay?
When I came to trademark, it was because of Joe Law and Stevie Nolan, who had that embedded in them. They were socialists. They were training people on equality. They were training people on, you know, your voice has to be heard. They definitely didn't want any hierarchy. They knew that everybody's skills and commitment and input to any business, organization, group was as valuable as anybody else's. So all voices should be heard. They did agree on a democratic way of, you know, there wasn't going to be some boss sitting at the top telling everybody what to do, that they would collectively talk together about what system or what project or what road they were going to go down. So they already had the cooperation bones. You know, they were already cooperators. They just didn't have the tag or the name.
Yeah, no, it just sounds very pioneering because, you know, I think one of the reasons why, you know, co-ops are able to kind of adopt these ideas is because there is a wider culture of other co-ops who are doing it, so they can learn from each other, and you know, the precedent has been set. Whereas it sounds like, you know, in Belfast, you know, these two were kind of building this from scratch. So if you could start with how your role evolved from being the office and financial manager to then kind of being brought on to more of the projects, and how that then led to you getting involved and helping to start the Belfast Cleaning Cooperative.
My role in trademark was part-time at the beginning, part-time office finance. As the projects grew within trademark, and then we had two more staff members join, the workload got bigger because there was more funders to deal with, there was more payroll to deal with, there was more returns to deal with. So I moved from part-time to full-time, and I was working with the development officers and also the trainers and the facilitators. And at some stages, I sat in with some of the training programs. And I also help coordinate and set up different programs for the women's groups, whether they were along this interface or whether they were further afield in other parts of the north of Ireland. That built up my skills and it built up my knowledge a bit as well. I actually held finance awareness and financial system courses to help the women who were starting up maybe small women's groups. I would have facilitated a few workshops on that, saying this is your best system to use this system. And I would have been at a beck and call to them and see if they needed help setting up different financial systems so that the funder or whoever was donating the money could see that there was really sound financial systems in place. So that was part of my job at the time. In 2011, we were working with the Highfield and Shankill Women's Group, which is a Protestant Loyalist group, and the Falls and Clonard Women's Group, which is a Catholic Nationalist group. These women were doing training programs on human rights and equality, conflict resolution, history and identity, and learning about their own history, learning the truths about each other's history. These women who were members of the women's groups, an awful lot of them were cleaners, and they were treated very badly. And everybody sees that a cleaning job is a menial job. Pay was minimal, 0 hour contracts, told as and when they wanted to be coming in, so women couldn't. No, didn't know from 1 week to the other if they were going to have enough money to pay their bills or to feed their children. But these women were from both sides of the community and they were doing training courses. And as every wee pot of funding money that you get from a funder, it always comes to an end. There is no sustainability. But these women had built up friendships and trust within each other. But it was a bit of luck that was struck that day that I received a phone call. And it was one of my friends who worked down in the ASSE arena. And he asked me, Alice, do you know a cleaning company? And I says, I don't, But in my head, I was thinking of the women from the Cross Community Women's Group. And I says, will you give me an hour and I'll ring you back? And I happened to ring one woman who was a really good friend of mine from the Protestant community. And I rang her and she was in the town shopping with a woman from the Nationalist community. And I says, would you like to work at the MTV Awards? Because that was what the phone call was about. They needed a cleaning team to clean up after the MTV Awards, which came to Belfast in 2011. So right away, Queenie says, absolutely, I would love to do it. And she was with Geraldine, and Geraldine went, yeah, I'll do it as well. And they were both cleaners. The feedback from the client was amazing. The feedback from the backstage crew was fantastic. And we sat the women down and said, would you like to form a business? Would you like to form a cooperative? And then at the same time, Joe Bird came over. And through a plan to cooperative business consultants through the Co-ops UK fund, they were awarded 3 days of expert advice and guidance and helped to do their rules. I sat in on all of them because I was one of the founders with the women. And Joe Bird took me aside and said, Ali, we also have a fund to help educate and train more cooperative business consultants. And I think you would be an ideal candidate. Would you shadow me any co-op she's working with in the north of Ireland? Because she was in Derry and she was in Belfast and she was different parts of the country. And she says, would you like to shadow me? And then I need you to, it was like an educational program for me. I had then to do case studies. I had to write up, their aims and objectives. I had to help them with the rules. In May 2012, became the first registered workers' cooperative in the north of Ireland, and probably ever. We started slowly by looking for small contracts because the initial members, three of them were already working part-time. So we had to fit in customers that would fit in with their lives. And we did that. Trademark was their first customer. And then we had a contract signed up with Creative Workers because they had their own business in the town. The Irish Congress of Trade Unions then became involved and said, we need a cleaning company. We would like to use the co-op. And as the years has gone by, the customer base has grown. The many members has grown. We have, this is 2025, we have 17 people on the books. 13 are weekly paid permanent worker members, and there's four casual workers who come because they're students or they're already working other jobs, and they come and fill in on holidays or sickness time or whenever they can.
And then, so Belfast Cleaning Cooperative has won at least two awards. What makes Belfast Cleaning Cooperative so special? What do you think it is that makes it stand out and makes it such a good example that has been used as a template?
The Belfast Cleaning Co-op started with working class women from very deprived backgrounds, deprived areas. Some of them hadn't got a lot of schooling or understanding of businesses. And one woman who has passed away was a founding member. And I remember her words to me was, if the cleaning co-op becomes financially stable and a woman is getting a real living wage, that will make me a very happy person. Just one woman, because that has made a difference to one person's life. And that sort of sticks for me. And that was Margaret McQuaid Queenie, who was the woman that I rang the day of the MTV Awards. And she was one of the founding members. And that sort of sticks in my head. If it empowers one woman's life and helps her family, that is all worth doing. It's a collective of women who are working together for the betterment of themselves and their community. These people who sit around a table together, we have a WhatsApp group and it's non-stop. It's no like it's like one girl puts up, I need next Friday off, who's covering me? And the next girl goes, I'll cover you if you cover me. And then the next one goes, here, I need 2 weeks annual leave. And then before you know it, there's a list of girls going, I'll cover this day, I'll cover that day. You've got someone saying, I'm low on cleaning supplies, and someone who drives goes, I'll drop you down some. You wouldn't get that in any other work, Peter. You would not get that anywhere else. So you have that as well, but you also have the added responsibility of making sure that the money's in, the wages are paid, the bills are paid, the insurance is covered, and that we continually win tenders to keep everyone in employment and having a wage at the end of the week, a real living wage. But I'm very proud of every single one of them, and I'm very proud of it. And it has been seen as a winner, and it has been seen as a great case study. People asked about it all the time, and when I tell the story, whether it's to council or to a community organization or to a women's group or to even to the Real Living Wage Foundation, when I tell the story, it's like I get emails going, that is so inspiring. So I applied on behalf of the Belfast Cleaning Co-op, and I told the story of the Belfast Cleaning Co-op, of working class women from working class Belfast, with a 60 football divides them, are working together for the betterment of themselves, for their co-op, and for their families and for their local community. And they won the award in 2016 for the living wage employer, and it really gave the women a boost. In 2020, COVID hit us all, and we were all at lockdown. It was devastating for so many people, and it was also a bit devastating for the cleaning co-op, because our cleaning customers work in offices, and when you start closing down offices and people are working from home, we've no offices to clean. We lost 60% of our income within a matter of a month, and we had to furlough some staff, and the staff members who were furloughed, the other ones who were not, because we have clients who are Women's Aid, and we clean up after their office space. We also clean up their refuges that are based around Belfast. And they email through to say, please do not stop the service. We really need you. Because when you're a victim of domestic violence and you have no help, but everybody's furloughed and your abuser is furloughed and at home with you, you're locked in a home with an abuser 24/7, whereas when they were at work, the woman would have got a bit of respite. So the refuges within Women's Aid were overflowing, and they said, please do not stop our cleaning. So we increased the cleaning in Women's Aid. We went in with better PPE on us than the hospital staff in the hospital wards. We then invested in machines that did disinfectant fogging. They're called a fogging machine, and they do disinfectant spraying all around the building and kill any particles of virus, or which was COVID at the time. We invested in three of those machines and gallons of the disinfectant spray. And that was a real turner for us, because all the office blocks asked, can you go in and do a full disinfectant spray of our buildings? Which brought us more income. Even though we lost to 60% of our regular monthly income, we were bringing in income. So every single worker that was furloughed did not lose one penny of salary during every single lockdown, because of the other workers who were not furloughed doing the extra work. And they won the Key Worker Award in the Living Wage Foundation in 2022. And it's a lot of hard work, Caleb. It's not all champagne and roses. You know, the women work very hard. They need support and guidance at times. Some of the workers do not want to be members, and the reason for that is they're frightened of the responsibility of a business on their head, because we're also brainwashed for working for the man and getting your weekly wage and going home and not having a say in your work. So they have that fear still, and they just want to go home. That's fine. The door's open for them when they're ready to come in to be a member.
So, what were some of the challenges and some of the ongoing challenges that you that the Belfast Cleaning Cooperative kind of are going through? I mean, you said, you know, that there are some people who are, you know, not quite ready to take that step to be members. Like, yeah, what other things have they kind of? And obviously, you've talked about COVID, which was a massive struggle, but you, I mean, seems you came out of that stronger, which is amazing. But yeah, what are some of the other challenges that along the way you've had to kind of navigate?
I can tell you honestly, the challenges are getting people to join. Even though we have grown over this last 13 years, it is, and we have members still from 13, 12, 10 years ago, still the same girls, still coming into work. If we win a big contract, it is so difficult to get other people to come on board. We have advertised for jobs many times, and it is not, we will employ you, it is come and join us. Come and join us. And we have had 40 applicants, and we dwindle it down to five, and we set up five interviews, and no one shows up. It's getting employees. It is so hard. And if we had employees for every contract that we potentially won, we would have 40 years membership now. We would be making all sorts of contracts all over Belfast. And there's people further than Belfast asking us to come and do a job. So that is the biggest problem. The biggest problem is that. So it stunts the growth a bit. It stunts the growth of the co-op because we can't get the right people on board.
And what are you finding is difficult there? Because it sounds like the WhatsApp chat's kicking off, there's great crack. Seems that there's a strong positive community. I would have assumed that everybody's kind of telling their friends about how great it is.
Sometimes we have got members word of mouth, people coming on board and saying, yeah, I'll do the job. I can do that. But no, it's the community feeling is still there. But yeah, I think also the education of the co-op and going out into the community more so would get people to understand who we are, what we do. I have done it quite a few times. We have things online. But then it would mean people would be more aware of who we are. And I think we need to go down the education road to say to people, like, this is completely different ball game. You're gonna be working for a collective, you're gonna be working for a co-op. Or if you have an idea of a co-op, we can help you set one up and we'll show you how to do it, But no. And when you tell the story about them and they're there and they're out and helping, people go, oh, really? And is that what a co-op is? I remember the first time hearing about Sumo. I remember hearing about Principle Six. I remember hearing about, different cooperatives that are based over in England. And I just thought, this really works. These people are working collectively together. They're equal. They're earning a decent living wage. They're giving back to the community. They have a voice. They're being heard. And look, they're still going 20, 30 years later. This really works. And that's when I was hearing it. So when I'm telling the story about the Belfast Skinning Corp, people are getting the same reaction because they've never heard of it, and then all of a sudden they hear about it. So that's why I said in my previous sentence, education is key. We need to get more out there.
We can end there with that call to action of we need more education about co-ops, which obviously I completely agree with.
Yeah,
So yeah,
definitely.
Alice, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me and coming on.
You're more than welcome, Kill.
Really enjoyed our conversation. And look forward to chatting again in the future for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe see each other face to face.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
Okay.
To support Punch Card, head to opencollective.com/workerscoop/projects/punchcard to become a financial contributor from just £5 a month and help bring worker cooperatives to a new generation.